page one. Ve'ilu yotzot shelo b'ketuvah. The following women lose their monetary right to love upon the divorce. Ha'overat al dat Moshe b'Yehudit. A woman who violates biblical law and also Jewish customary law. Ve'ezu hu dat Moshe. What is an example of a woman who violates dat Moshe? Achilato she'eino mu'usa. She feeds her husband food which ma'aser has not been taken. U'misham she'to nida, or she has sexual relations with her husband while she's still a nida. V'lo kotza la chala, or she doesn't take away the chala. V'noderet ve'eina makayemet. So all, with the exception of the last, are areas in which the woman tricks her husband into committing a violation. Ve'ezhu dat Yehudit, yotzav rosha palua. V'tava v'shuk medaberet im kol adam. Okay, so now let's take a look at the Gemara. Ma'achilato she'eino mu'usar hekidami. How is it possible that she gives her husband food that has not been properly tied? Idiyata, if he knows that the food that she's giving him has not been properly tied, yifrosh, he should simply not eat it. I mean, what? Idiyata, and if he was unaware of the fact that the food had not been properly tied, manayada, how did he find out? Lo tzricha. The Amrale Ploni Kohen Tikein Li Etakeri, that so-and-so the Kohen performed all the necessary acts to remove the Tumah and the Maser and what have you from the food. The Azil Shaile, and then he went, put it in your pocketbook or something. The Ishtaka Shikra, and he caught her in a lot. If he knew that she was a nida, and if Rosh, if lo yada nesmoch, if lo yada, damar bichinina bakahana amar shmuel manayin lenida shesaferat laatzma sheneemar v'safra la shevat yamim la laatzma. The woman is believed normally on the issue of whether or not she is a nida. Lo tzricha da amra leploni chacham tiher li et adam. She had a question as to whether a particular fighting of something that looked like blood rendered her a nida or not, and she said that she claimed that she went to so and so the rabbi and asked whether or not she was indeed a nida. Found out that it was to be a lie. Okay. Let's skip a little bit. What happened here? Did I not Xerox appropriately? That you who did. I must have skipped something here. In any event, I'm doing the Xeroxing. But anyway, the Gemara says that if a woman goes out with her hair uncovered, that's dat Moshe. How about
what? Hair uncovered is dat Yehudit.
Dat Moshe. As a kosher can, ha'aval. If she goes out with a basket on her head, it's also prohibited. If the woman is supposed to keep her hair covered even in her house, how is this possible? It's an Amar Bari became Arkanami Chatzer Vachatzer Derech HaMabul. I guess if you look on my page 3 with the English translation, I did a better Xeroxing job. And what is deemed to be a wife's transgression against Jewish practice? Going out with the uncovered hair. Is not the prohibition against going out with uncovered hair Pentateuch? Is it an Isur D'oraita? But it is written, but he shall uncover the woman's head. And this is taught in school by Shmuel as a warning to the daughters of Israel that should not go out with an uncovered head. Pentateuchally, it's quite satisfactory if her head is covered by her work basket. According to traditional Jewish practice, however, she is forbidden to go out uncovered, even with her basket on her head. Okay? So here we have a clear statement in the Gemara that a woman can be possibly issued a divorce and loses all of her monetary rights if she goes out with her hair uncovered into a Shuta Rabim, even if it's covered with a basket, because it's not completely covered the way traditional Jewish women cover their hair.
Definition.
Mishnah and Gemara. If we look at my page 4, The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak tefach b'isha erva, that an uncovered portion of flesh, even a fistful, is erotically stimulating, and therefore one cannot pray or say Kriyat Shema when that's visible. Lamai. If it's a question of a prohibition of actually staring at a woman with the purpose of deriving pleasure from just seeing it, so that can't be the case, because if there is an erotic intent on the part of the man, it would be prohibited. Is everything okay?
No, I just want to get a better chair.
Oh, okay.
And a better view of Rebbe.
All right. Elav ishto ulekriyat shema. So this is not talking about a case where there's a prohibition. Man is allowed, presumably, to look with satisfaction on his wife. But this is talking about whether he is allowed to say shema in the presence of a woman who is partially uncovered in the sense. Amarav chista. In other words, a person is not allowed to recite Shema in the presence of the uncovered hair of even his wife. Okay, so here are clear laws prohibiting the uncovering of hair on the part of a married woman to go out into the shuk, and prohibiting the recital of the Shema in the presence of a woman whose hair is uncovered. Clear, unambiguous statements in the Gemara. Now, my mother did not cover her hair. My grandmother did not cover her hair. If you remember, the Rebbetzin Soloveitchik did not cover her hair. Who are once in a while, you're a neighbor of theirs, so you can also testify that this was the case. So here we have a clear-cut situation in which Jewish practice, the way it was known in the last two or three generations, simply blatantly contradicted the clear, unambiguous statements in the Gemara.
Lithuania, I think, was less.
Huh?
Lithuania, Lithuania.
There were differences in countries and differences in times.
Did they give a reason other than the part of the scene where it might be erotic?
Yeah, that's the reason. The reason is.
Who did they think created it?
Are you asking a polemical question?
I just don't understand the rationale.
The rationale here is very...
They know that the Almighty created women. If a man is saying the Kriya Shema to the Almighty,
look,
in the presence of his wife, what...
Right, can you imagine a situation in which a woman would be dressed provocatively or erotically? If a woman... Maybe if the man's wife was dressed in a bikini or something which would be sexually provocative according to our mores, it would be too great a distraction to say the Shema in her presence. Isn't that an understandable rule? Okay, so
that's not what the...
That is what the Gemara is talking
Arabia,
about. That is what the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is saying that even if it's your own wife, if she's dressed in a provocative or a radically arousing manner, then you should not say Shema because you're going to be distracted. And similarly, your wife should not go out in public in a sexually provocative dress. As an abstract rule, I think you could agree to this. The question is, what's the definition? And the Gemara's definition may not happen to coincide with yours, but at least the abstract rule is understandable. Furthermore, do we have any problem with that? No.
What role the man should address, the man should be in?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. It assumes that in these...
It doesn't fit with my abstract.
No. It may very well be that men are more... It's a biologically debatable fact as to whether men are more visually arousable sexually than women. I think there have been studies to that effect. Okay. That's deviating a bit much. Okay, so...
I have a question, though. This is the Gemara. Now, what is the Gemara based on? Is it based on Chumash somewhere?
It cited some sources. It cited Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, for example, which indicates that hair is an erotically arousing component of a woman's makeup.
I hair designs a flock of goats? How does that make it?
Because it's descriptive of the Pasuk in Shir Hashirim is trying to describe her erotically, the brides or the erotic ones erotically arousing features. Of course. All right, now, so we have several questions here. One is, how is it that in the old generation, that is in my mother's generation, in my grandmother's generation, in your family's generation, I would assume as well, this particular law was observed in a breach?
My mother and father were in Worcester. It was completely different. I talk about my wife's family. She was a rough in Chicago, as you know. And he was a funny thing. He scared my mother-in-law, Rashawn, by taking a little bit of a hair. He said, I'm going to get it never happened. He just teasing her.
Uh-huh.
But he clipped off a little bit of hair.
So she didn't cover her hair either, no. Your mother-in-law?
Certainly in my family, my grandmother, my
grandmother. Shaitel? Who says you're allowed to wear a shaitel?
I didn't cover hair.
That was covered.
We will just see that there's a huge debate as to whether you're allowed to wear a shaitel. Let's first not take anything for granted here. We have, first of all... Right. After all, okay, and then now, of course, as Jonathan points out, the covering of the hair has become a flag issue once again. So one now has to also understand what the religious and sociological and political motivations are to try to resurrect this particular rule in a community in which it has been more or less in abeyance for two or three generations. Okay? So we should look at the history of this because there's some interesting aspects to it. Okay. I'm not going... I should read at an appropriate juncture...
Excuse me, Barry, what about the single girl? There never was a requirement.
No.
So would that be... You want to say Shema before a single
That's girl? A question that's... That's a technical question that's aroused... discussed in the book. Okay? I now want to skip all the way to the 16th century. So that's my page 6. There are two great rabbis of the 16th century, and we will read about a tshuva of the first of the Maharal Malashkar. As you can see, he was born in Spain in 1466, left with the exiles in 1492, moved to Tunisia and then Greece, and then he became a dayan in Cairo, and finally settled in Jerusalem, where he died in 1542. And he was one of the great poskim of the 16th century. And another rabbi, equally great, was a Spanish exile who lived in Italy. And he was on the cutting edge of the new technology of trying to get the Talmud printed, but he wasn't terribly successful at that. But some of the things that we take for granted in reading the Talmud, like the Ein Mishpat or the Ner Mitzvah, which are all the halachic citations on each and every page of the Talmud, are all the compilations of this one man. And in addition, another thing that's used all the time is the Shultei HaGiborim, which is a super commentary to the Rif, which we use all the time.
By the same
Yeshua Boaz, right.
So what is his acronym? What do you call it?
He's called the Shultei HaGiborim.
I never noticed.
Okay. All right. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos indicates that a woman is allowed to go out into a Shut HaRabim wearing ribbons made out of hair. And I quoted the Gemara on my page, whatever it was, my page 5, preceding page.
Yotzei, some kind of wig.
No, both two things. Yotzei Yisha Bochutei Sa'ar, Bein Mishalah, Bein Mishavertah, Bein Mishal Behema, Yvototapot Vasavitim, Benoit Sman Shahim Tvurim. The issue here is what constitutes those kinds of clothes or ornaments in which a woman might be likely to take off because of one reason or another while she's in Rishut HaRabim and then carry them.
So this is for carrying on Shabbat.
So the problem here is carrying on Shabbat, and you don't want to allow a person to wear certain things which might, because of various concerns, be carried on Shabbat. Okay? This is, of course, not our issue, but let's look what the Shiltei HaGibarim has to say on this, on my page 7. Yira'e mizeh lahavi raya usmach lenashim hayotzot bekisui sa'arot shelahem kishehen nesuot, aval lemakom kliyat sa'aran nosot sa'arot chavroteihem. So this might be a source for allowing women to go out into Rishut HaRabim wearing a shape, wearing a wig, whether of her hair or someone else's hair. Shikorina, now I assume that this is the Spanish name for wig, but our Spanish expert isn't here this evening, so I can't check up on that. Shikorin karinalu balaz mahida shaninu beperach lanma isha yotzad asa makdalot she isha yotzet bepeya nachrit b'shabbat, that she's a woman is allowed to go out with a wig on Shabbat. Uperushu hamafarshim ki peya nachrit hi mikbat yukubo seyo na'ava harbe v'tasim ota ha'isha al rosha kedei shetikashet basar v'atam v'isha nesua ma'irit. So he brings proof that a married woman is allowed to go out into the street wearing a shape. This is, and
why should that be a question? If you're wearing something, even a hat, you don't question whether you can go out on Shabbos.
No.
Why,
the issue here isn't whether she's allowed to wear a hat or a wig on Shabbos.
Yeah.
On Shabbat, that's not the question.
And wear anything on Shabbat.
No, that's not the question. He's trying to prove from here the following revolutionary fact, that a married woman can go out into the street any day of the week, not necessarily Shabbat, wearing a shevel. The Gemara says very clearly that a married woman has to keep her hair covered, completely covered. So obviously, what's the difference as far as the erotic character goes, if she's going out with her own hair, or she's going out with somebody else's hair, which looks identical to her own hair? Excuse me?
It's just as erotical. You don't know if she's wearing
the issue of
erotic. If the reason for prohibiting a married woman from going out
is because you're not allowed to appear with your hair uncovered, then why should you be allowed to wear a wig? And this is he's citing that there's apparently, this is a relatively new practice, because this question had not arisen before, except from the citation in the Mishnah, but during the entire time of the period of the Rishonim, let's say from the 10th or 11th century until the Shiltei HaGiborim, we don't find any really serious discussion of this issue. And apparently in Spain or in Italy, I would assume in Italy more than in Spain, women were accustomed to wearing wigs. I mean, I got out the Encyclopedia Britannica article on wigs, and that they became very fashionable for men in the 17th and 18th century, especially because of the French king showing off all of his hair and so on. And women apparently also started to wear wigs, and apparently Jewish women, in violation of previous practice, would go out and wear these wigs. And he is trying to justify this by using the Gemara and Shabbos, or the Mishnah and Shabbos, as a proof text to the fact that a shetel should be permissible.
There's something different between them. There must be something between a wig and a piece of cloth or a tam or anything else. The wig is just another piece of, just an accoutrement.
If a woman's hair is...
There must be something sexual about it.
No, it just looks like hair.
Maybe it's a redheaded.
Yeah. Very
that's the point. That's his point.
A woman, as I say, it must be more than just another piece on her head.
I don't understand what's complicated here. The woman, the Gemara makes the assumption that, let's argue on the assumption that a woman's uncovered hair is erotic. We may not agree with that, but let's operate under that assumption for the moment. Then why should she be allowed to wear a wig?
Again, it has to be a sex.
If a married woman is not allowed to show her hair in public because that's being sexually provocative, then why should a wig be allowed?
Although, of course, this proof text here doesn't refer to married women.
No, he says that it does. He claims and brings arguments to the effect that it's referring to married women. I don't know. Let's first stick to what the Jewish sources say.
The old time wigs were so ugly that, you know, you remember the old...
No, but this is not the case. We're talking here about very attractive wigs that women used to wear in Italy in the 16th century. and they were wearing these wigs, and apparently married women would actually wear. This was something novel for the Shultei HaGibbonim. And he found some justification of this by bringing a proof text. Whether we agree with Jonathan that this argumentation is weak or strong is not so important. He claims that he can prove from the Gemara that it's talking about married women, and since the Gemara mentions in passing that married women were allowed to go out, wear such a wig on Shabbat, this implies that there's no problem about their wearing a wig during the week, which implies that a married woman can go out into the street in a shake. Okay?
I just see one thing in here. The Jewish Encyclopedia had pictures of various hair couples.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like fruit and all kinds of ornamentation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was a problem.
No, the problem is that a woman's hair is considered as erotic, provocative.
These things didn't look provocative.
And the fact is that up until the time of the Shultei HaGibbonim, the custom of Jewish women was not to have married women was not to expose their hair and not to use the fiction of wearing a shavel. And then in the 16th century, for I don't know what the ambient society was doing, but I gather from the encyclopedia that wigs came more or less into fashion in the 17th century or 16th century, sometime around this time. Married Jewish women began to wear wigs, shetla, and this no doubt distressed some rabbis, as we will see in a moment. The reaction to this sack of the Shultei HaGibbonim was quite violent and negative. And he tries to prove from the Gemara that this is not such a terrible practice. So, I mean, this should be relatively clear. I mean, if we skip a moment and go to my page 10, which is a tshuva from a contemporary rabbi, Rabbi Eilenberg, my page 10, Galsinin b'Nazir, Perach Misha Amar, B'tan Amar HaLefshar B'peya Nachrit, Matzati Kapuf B'Shem Gilyom, G'zel L'Shono, Nerali Mikan, it would seem to me from here, Yeshua Boaz. So that was another site, I brought that as well, that the same author, the author of the Shultei HaGibbonim, tries to establish as well from the Gemara in Nazir that a married woman is allowed to go out with a shekel. וכן כתב זה החכם הנזכר בשלטי הגיבורים שלו בפרק במה אישה יוצאת, המתניתן יוצא אישה בקבול ופי הנחרית בחצר, וזה לשונו, נראה להניע תעתי להביא ראיה וסמך לנשים היוצאות בכיסוי שערות שלהם כשהן נשואות, אבל במלכון קליאת שערה נושאות שערות חברותיהם שקוראים קרינה לו, ולאז מהידי שנינן דוחר כאיש מהאישה יוצא, דף סמת אלה שהאישה יוצאת בפי הנחרית בשבת. וכאשר מפרשים כי פיה היא נקבעת ידקו בל סיון הרעי הרבה ותשימו לרשע, etc. etc. We just read. לא אריה לזנו, etc. ובדיר, etc. עד ואין לו מה שהיו, etc. עד כאן לשונו, let's look it down. ואני מצאתי בכתיבת יד הרב המובהק מורי ליהודה קצנלנבוגן שכתב עליו לא זה הדרך ולא זו העיר שהנקילו לנו אבותינו חכמי המשנה והגמרא והמפרשים. So he first cites a contemporary saying that this is absolutely outrageous, that this is not an appropriate matter, and then he writes a very long tshuva, which I will let you read on at your leisure, to the effect that this psak of the Shultei HaGibbonim, that a married woman is allowed to appear in public in a shetel, is completely wrong. It runs counter to Jewish practice and should be prohibited. And this is the start of a debate that lasted maybe couple of centuries, maybe until the present time, as to whether or not a married woman is allowed to appear in public wearing a shape.
But that implies that he believes they should wear a covering.
That's right. You have to cover your hair with a kerchief. For example, you remember the way the Rav's mother used to. Okay. All right. So this is one. So there's a daring response from the. From the Shultei HaGibbonim trying to justify local practice, which was that married women would appear in public with a shetel, and this was objected to strongly by Rabbi Eilenberg, the founder of a long dynasty of Rabbanim, in Poland, and I was very friendly with one of the descendants.
I think I know which one.
Yes, Professor Sammy Eilenberg. I was very touched because he once said to me that, you know, that when his father realized that he was not going to be an observant Jew, but was going to be a mathematician, his father said to him that, you know, I'm glad to see that you're serving God by trying to create mathematics and understand God's role in the universe. And he said that to me when he was no longer a youngster, must have been my age or older, 20 or 30 years ago. But in any event, he was a great man and the last of that family. But this, the beginning of that family was the author of the Shuvot of Be'er Sheva and one of the earliest opponents of the position of the Shilte HaGiborim, who wanted to allow a married woman to wear a sheik. And this was a debate. I now want to read, we sort of skimmed over the Shilte HaGiborim, we only got the main points, but the Tshuva of Noam Alashka is so important that we should read it in detail. That's by page 8, so we're going back a bit. Kalmasan. It's a place, I assume, in North Africa. I don't know, in Crete, I don't know these. I guess it's where I am. By page 8. Very top. We're going to read this whole Tshuva. We're going to read it thoroughly because it's an extremely interesting Tshuva. This is Rabbi Alashkar writing from Kalamasan. I don't know where that is. I assume in one of his ports of call. He was, of course, a Sephardic Jew, but was in the East when he was writing this. Sha'alti mimeni hayadid, im yesh lachush le'elu hanashim shenahagu l'ga'alot sa'aran michutz l'tzamatan l'tnatmahed bo. Apparently, the custom of the women there was to keep most of their hair covered, but to have a certain amount of hair visible and ornamented so as to be attractive. L'chish Masha Shamanu, Misha Horav Amar, because we have heard some creature coming to say, Sheker Nahalo Imotenu, that our mothers have behaved improperly, Hanahagot Lagalot, who have allowed themselves, our mothers have engaged in this practice of allowing a portion of the hair to be uncovered and, in fact, to be coiffed or what have you, make look nice. Because this is certainly prohibited, even to have a small amount of hair showing. So here we have the typical situation of a Baal Tshuva movement trying to change the practice of the women back to what it says in the Gemara. Tshuva, Ibra, the Ein Beit Nichush Leoto Seyar Klal, Kevan Shenahagu Lagaloto, Va'afilu Lekriyat Shema. There is no problem whatsoever with this hair that these women show because this is the way they go around. And therefore, it can't be considered as erotic since it's the normal wear that women wear, and therefore one should be allowed to say Kriyat Shema in the presence of a woman who uncovers this amount of hair. Bahida se'ar v'isha erva, and this rule that the hair of a woman constitutes an erotic provocation or distraction, lo mari elo v'se'ar shederech ha'isha l'chasota. That's only referring to hair that is normally covered. Dumia de tefach, like a fistful of flesh, which only refers to those areas of the flesh which most women keep covered. An area of skin that is normally covered. If we're talking about a married woman then even to look at her little finger would be prohibited if you're doing this for pleasure. She'ein da'akol liot mukusa asol estakel. Mushani lo tzvicha le'ishto le'kriyashma. Peirush. Di'im tefach mugula ba'lo yikra kiyat shma kenegda. V'amwina nami hatam. Amo avchista shok v'yisharava. Amo shmuel kol v'yisharava. Amo shesh esayasar v'yisharifa. V'ikaman d'parish de'kol hani nami le'inyan kriyat shma minun. V'chein peirush rabbeinu ha'igal. V'ikam, so the general interpretation of the Gemara is referring to the statement of being able to recite the Kriya Shema. V'ikaman de mafarish lo ayri le'inyan kriya shema ela tefach dafka v'heche v'yit v'yitva. V'nima v'yizai da'at ha'rambam idlo asar v'yishtel lo kriya shema ela tefach dafka v'hani achrini yasalu l'gabe shishit prek chafal ha'kmi ilchot yisod v'yah. Al rashi zal af al gav de dachamokim lo v'yishitish katatuhu hadin nami v'yishtel lo kriya shema de davar v'yava v'yishitish asur v'yishtel lo kriya shema. Rabbizal he Schmidt Kalzen in Kriyat Shema Filo either Tefach to Twini Behaji Bekriyat Shema Bekatava La Ravazal, the Filo Mishum de Aminan La El, Agavot Ein Behem Shiva, so Ravazal the Kol Shikin Tefach the Shok the Seyava Kol Adka. Ishtaka Hashta, so we therefore see the Lekibre Kula, according to all opinions, Ein Beoto Seyash Shum Shashi Sukla. There's no prohibition whatsoever in that hair that the local custom here is to keep uncovered. The man the mokilu meishetish anu la meishetish askinu the man the mukilav yishtel le nasa ela le kriyat shema v'dalko v'davar shedarko liot mepusa d'matpira le aviyati le dehihu aval davar shedarko liot megula d'libo gaspa. If we're talking about hair in normal practice is normally left uncovered, but a man just is takes for granted, mutar v'afilu l'kriyat shema k'dib k'dishit, v'chein katru ha'mafashim zal, v'chein katar v'avi avya, kol elu she'eskinu le'ov adachka, v'davar she'einu v'gilut l'igalo. Avo v'tulah ha'vigila v'giloi ha'sar, lo chashinan d'leka hiru ad kam.
Why did they make the issue kriyat shema? What about the rest of the day?
No, he's saying that it's a distraction.
Don't be around during that time.
No, if it's your wife, you're allowed to be aroused by your wife. You shouldn't be saying kriyat shema in a state of distraction.
That means if he wasn't saying Krishna, she could go around without
it. In the house. There are two problems. One is whether she's allowed to wear that in dress provocatively in public. The other is not whether she's allowed to dress provocatively in private, but whether he's allowed to recite Kriyat Shema if she is. She's certainly allowed.
In the case, she's allowed to go with her hair uncovered inside the house, as the Gemara said, because otherwise, slow enough, we'll see even that. Is debated once the Zohar comes into effect. But at the moment, let's assume the din of the Gemara that the woman is allowed to go with her hair uncovered in the house because it's in the privacy of her own home. But since this is a somewhat sexually provocative mode of dress, she's not allowed to go out in public this way, if you interpret the Gemara properly. Or her husband shouldn't be saying Kriyat Shema in her presence because he's going to be distracted. That's the issue. Does he have to go into another room? Does he have to go into another room if all women all around in this community dress this way so it is no longer considered sexually provocative? What the Maram al-Ashkar is saying is this very revolutionary principle that whether something is or is not erotically provocative depends on the society in which it's occurring. So if a woman in a situation where women would normally keep this amount of hair uncovered, then that amount of hair that's kept uncovered is not erotically arousing because it's just an everyday occurrence. That's the way it is. And furthermore, it would not be prohibited for a woman to go out in the street that way because that's how all women dress. So a woman, this is, after all, a somewhat non-linear situation. On the one hand, the rules will determine the mode of dress to some extent. You want to have rules of modesty, but on the other hand, the issue of what is or what is not provocative depends on the circumstance of the society. For example, this is a presumably psychologically sound principle, that the issue of whether something is or is not provocative is sociologically dependent. And if this is the way all women go around, that is, all women are accustomed to having this amount of hair appearing outside of their kerchief, then a married woman would be allowed to do that. And therefore, you cannot prohibit it, nor should her husband be prevented from saying Kriya Shema in such a situation. Okay. V'chein yiskin ba'alamor chai ba'arash v'akol kefihim ha'min ha'gold v'ha'makonot. So therefore the issue of what is or is not sexually provocative depends upon place and circumstance. וכתב הרש פזל בחידושה ברחב זה לשונו, והודי אמר אבי יצח טפח באישה אדוב, גמיון אשתו, לפייץ מהפר, שראי בדי אשר במקום צנוע, שבא בעלה כעתירה, תסתובבי בדשוק מקום צנוע בעל, ויפילו לגבי בעלה, אף על פי שאין במקום צנוע באיש. אבל פניה, ידיה ורגליה, וכל דיברה שאינו זמר, רום קונברסיישן, ושערה חוץ לצמתה שאינו מתכסה, and also hair that normally your goat appears outside of her head covering. Ein choshishim lehem b'nei shehu ragil behem. V'lo tavir. U'v'isha acheret asur l'estakel apilu yetzba kano v'sara adka. V'chein nami katar ba'al ochot chayim. Arol paneha yadeha v'ragleha v'sara mechutz l'tzamata she'enu mitkasa ba'ein choshishim b'nei shehu ragil behem. V'chein shamati shekatav ba'al ha-mikhtav ve'ein zet tzarich l'pnim. This does not require any proof. The divrei kulam ein bo tzad yisur klal. Adarabah, she'itiru be'feirush v'afilu kriyat shema ve'he'idu she'nahagu l'galato. And as a side benefit from this discussion, we see that in all of these communities, a certain amount of hair was left uncovered as a amount of normal practice. ובדאי כי כן היו נהגות בנות ישראל בימי חכמי המשנה והתלמוד זל ואפשר ואפילו בידון על דרמתמן בזמן שמית משת קיים כדיתו בהדר פרקס כתב ואתם נתם עושה שקל תשיטה ומשאיר את דבר מועט מה הוא אמר ויצא אדם משנה משכח בירושלים ופרש בעל ארוך כתב בתשובת אשר איש הקולה צרו משאיר ממנו דבר מועט בין הזנה על הפרחתו כדי צדחתו הוא מביא סיד טרוף שיחבות ותראה אותו ושר ואינו חולת אותו אלא מטילה כנגדו פננסה עושה בת עיניים אבל השירה שלו כתוב בבשמים we don't have to go into all these details of the women's כפור כדי שיתחבו שר ורצועות יקי הבעלות יתיב עד כאן וזה המנהג בעצמו ומנהג הנשים היום שהאישה חולת כל שרה ומשיירת צדים יורד על פניה ועוניקה בלשון חכמים בת סידה כמו שנדבר ונוגד כן גם כן לסרוק אותה בבשמים ושמן הטוב כשעשות הרבה יותר הזמן אף על גב לא חזי למברך זכר לחורבן כדי תחתם even though it might should have been perhaps prohibited because of זכר לחורבן nevertheless the custom is that women do a certain amount of hairdressing to this hair and it's left outside of the they should not refrain from dressing without some a sign of mourning
Some hair up
that no, by not quaffing some of that hair. You go to a fancy hairdresser and you have most of it quaffed, but you leave a little bit out. But he's saying that the women didn't follow this custom. So even though they were supposed to, they didn't. Okay. V'chol ma shetimza b'sefer hazoah makpid al gilui sar isha efshar d'v'seyar shedarkah l'chasot dar nishtoi d'v'gemar astam enamika amam v'amin lo itma ela v'ma shedarkah l'chasot l'kiyashma. We will come to the Zohar either later tonight or next week. And if in fact the Zohar meant something else, I'll try to leave enough time to read the Zohar, then we don't listen to the Zohar on this matter, but follow our own custom and the Talmudic test. Now, Maybe they should, one should be required to cover her eyebrows. Because she came for now, you're there or glad, I mean Nami Lamisra, maybe there's some hair going on Maishna Osei Sava, Imishum the Dakan Liot Mugulin, Hai Nami Dakopia Mugula. And if it's because the eyebrows are always uncovered, well this amount of hair that the women leave on outside of their hair outside of the techel is also normally uncovered. ואילו עירי אלו וישתית של מסתכל ומכוון ליהנות, עתו וישתית של ראשי עסקינן, ובירור אמרו זיכרונו לבחור, ואפילו יצפה קטנה אסור להסתכל בו, ואפילו בגי צבעונים של אדם יסור, וכל שכן בשרד, את אמרו משמעת על כל דבר, שלא יסתכל אדם בשעון רעה, ואפילו פנויה וישתית ואפילו מוכרר, ורוב בגי צבע של אישה וחומר, ואמר יהודה אמר שמואל, ואפילו תוקן מגן על כבתן, אמר פאפה ומכיר את בעלים, אשר דברי אלו בטלים הם, ולכת היו ממש הכלל. So first of all, he says this demand by this preacher who's trying to say that our mothers and our wives and our grandmothers behave improperly is just completely wrong. He doesn't understand. And how unfeeling, what's the word I'm looking for? Insensitive this man is who makes such a thing. Now here's an interesting sociological fact, because apparently the custom of women, at least Jewish women, was to leave more hair uncovered amongst in the Muslim countries than the ones coming from the Christian countries.
Maybe to distinguish themselves.
I don't know. But in any event, he's claiming that I doubt that that's true, but because I'm assuming the Arabs, Muslims would not permit, I would think, Jewish women to dress any less modestly than the...
We're not reasonable. In fact, they demand it.
Let's
show their inferior status.
Mm-hmm.
A proper woman
would
be
based to
show their inferior status.
Okay, could be. But maybe Jonathan is right, okay? All right. How could he have the nerve to demand that these women should change this practice which has been going on for immemorial number of years in the Muslim countries? The af im haya asur. Even if this would have been prohibited according to law, he should never have attempted to force the women to change their practice. Even if this would be a biblical prohibition, So in other words, he's saying the technical question of whether this is an Issur D'oraisa or not is irrelevant. One doesn't try to change people's practice, even if it happens to be an Issur D'oraisa, if it's a form of an Issur that isn't clear to everyone, like violating the Shabbat and so on.
How can that be? Hanakla and if they're riding on Shabbos, everybody else is doing it.
No, he didn't say riding on Shabbos. To the contrary, he said those laws which are not clear-cut in the Torah, like violating the Shabbos, that those things which would be something like this, which is maybe...
Not clear-cut.
Yeah, anything that's not clear-cut, even though technically it's an Isur D'oraita, you don't try to impose it on the crowd knowing that they probably won't follow anyway.
What's wrong? Why does the local rabbi doesn't get up and say, look,
that's easy.
You know what you're doing?
That's exactly what he says. You shouldn't do.
Yeah, because then there'll all be a violation.
Right. Yeah. So he's saying, even if this rule of going with the hair uncovered would be prohibited, and even if it would be prohibited midin d'oraita, this preacher has no right to get up and try to change the custom that our women have been following for all of these generations.
So what's the job of a rabbi?
Tell them not
it
to
is
buy
to make
like a clear
known
law.
Things that people don't know.
Not to impose something which would not be accepted by the general public and...
Even though it's an issue, right?
Yeah. Black and white. I didn't say it.
So if that's the case...
Yeah. Right.
So if that's the case, and the custom over many years has been that women did not cover their hair...
We'll come to the custom of today. I'm just pointing out that this is this tshuva of the Maharam al Ashkar is a very important tshuva, but of course no modern rabbi. would be allowed to say it. Bahashta im v'diraita uv'darabanan amwinan hanach lahem. Even if it would be an Issur D'oraita or an Issur D'rabbanan, we say that we don't impose a ruling on the public when we know that they're not going to follow it anyway. Certainly, we don't tell them that they're not allowed to do something which is permissible. Shana haguba heter. Shekol hamochichin b'ze lo b'dabadat yidaber v'nimtza machshilin chas v'shalom v'yatid mitenet adin. Any preacher who tries to say that these women, that what you're doing is wrong, is going to pay the penalty when he comes before the Almighty as to his behavior.
How about the board of directors? Fire the guy.
V'ilmalei de mistafina, and if I'm not mistaken, havi amina da'afilu otam hanashim sheba'u megurashot me'artzot ha'arelim. Those women who were exiled from the Christian countries, shahayu no hagod lachasato kishayu sham, that would keep their hair covered when they were in the Christian countries, ein lahazhiram shelo legato. We do not demand that they retain their custom of keeping their hair covered, kevin sheakahavu diratan bekla, because they have decided to live here. Ve'ein lomar behen da'atam lashuv li'atzam.
Obviously not going
back. They're not going to go back to Spain. ובהד ימין בכולם כי סלק יבזל את ישראל אחל מגומת הרב שמואל פרש רב שמואל היו עושים בבבל משיפריקוב על המטה צפר ביסד קצ'ן זו שיטה ובשן כבר דעת סוג הסת. All right, so this is an extraordinary important shuv of the Maharal Ashkar, and he establishes a number of principles. One is that what is sexually arousing or erotic depends upon the customs of the society in which you're found, and therefore the hair which for generations, that portion of the woman's hair which for generations has always been kept uncovered, cannot be considered as gilui sa'ad. Secondly, even had it been